Welcome back to Win Tucson on this Monday. And I just have to say, I ran into a lot of people over the weekend that apparently are listening to the show and start quoting back some of our guests to me. And that's been kind of fun. And that's what we like. And actually yesterday at church, people were talking about the protest against the drag queens, and people wanted more information, and I was surprised, but sent that out to people. And
Power radio.
Power, exactly. And power of God. So to that point, I wanted to invite on Pastor Jonathan Armstrong. I've disclosed this before. I attend Tucson Baptist. I'm a member of Tucson Baptist Church. I love going there. My husband and I, it's our Tucson church, and it's our home church, and they do such amazing work. And there's a couple things coming up. So we've got the 4th Avenue Street Fair outreach. We've got Easter Eggstravaganza coming up. And I wanted Pastor Armstrong to kind of let the community know what these events are and why the church is participating in them. So, Pastor Armstrong, welcome to Win Tucson.
Thank you, Kathleen. Ms. Win, I appreciate your opportunity and allowing me to come on to your show and just kind of share where Tucson Baptist Church stands in our outreach and our what we want to do in our community. I really appreciate you having us on this morning.
Oh, that's great. Well, I remember the 4th Avenue Street Fair from before you were born, and we used to, because I was in college and I'm confident you weren't born yet, but the 4th Avenue Street Fair has just grown, and I think, if I remember correctly, if I was paying attention, like over 55,000 people will come over the days of the fair, and there, it's just a huge, wonderful gathering of people in Tucson, from Tucson, and even outside of Tucson. And tell my listeners what it is that you guys do. I love the name Project 520. I just think that's a great thing. So can you explain 520 and then what you do with the 4th Avenue Street Fair?
Absolutely. So about 2.5, so Tucson Baptist Church has been we were founded in 1958, and we've been really a pillar and in our community for since that time. But during last couple of years, especially during the COVID season, we kind of reevaluated our mission and how we were reaching our community. And one of the things that we realized is that we were really good about people coming to our campus. And we're a church that has around 800 people in it every weekend that come to our church. But we realized that we weren't going into our community and being a voice in our community. And so we realized that that's something that we needed to change. And so we introduced to our church Project 520. Obviously, 520 is the area code of Southern Arizona. Mm-hmm. And so our mission at Tucson is simply to love God, grow together, and then to reach Tucson. And we want to serve our community. We want to share the gospel with our community. And then we want to show our community how our church can minister to them and what our church can do for them. And so one of the ways that we have sought to do this is last year we went down to the 4th Avenue Street Fair, and we didn't really know what to expect, but we were the only church from the greater Tucson community that was there. Then we're just inviting them to church and just seeing how we could pray with people and how we could be we can minister to their needs even down there while they're shopping and getting their good food and coffee and all that. We wanted to be a spiritual voice and a spiritual light for them down in the 4th Avenue Street Fair. So that's this coming Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And we're excited to have two booths there this year where we can invite people to our Easter programs at church, where we can pray with them, and where we could just see if we could be a minister to our community there on the 4th Avenue.
So that's March 24th through 26th. Is that?
That's correct.
Friday, Saturday,
yes.
Sunday. Okay. And and if they come to the booth, what's going to happen? Go ahead. Yeah.
So at our booth, in the fair is from 10 a.m. to 6 a.m. or 6 p.m. And we're going to have people from our church there. And we have a spin the wheel prize. And so you can spin a wheel, get a bunch of cool Tucson Baptist Church merch. And we're excited for that. And then also it's just a time for us to Everybody that's there from our church has a mindset to serve. And so if there's something that we could pray with you about, something that we could give you some counsel with, we're just simply there to serve our community. And so we don't exactly know how that's going to look like and what that's going to look like with the 3 days there, but we're just there to serve and to be really Christ's hands and feet there on the 4th Avenue this coming weekend.
Well, and you brought up the fact that the church turned 65 years old this year, correct?
Yes, ma'am, that is correct.
And how many pastors have we had during that time?
So our church is blessed to have two pastors. So the founding pastor, Lewis Johnson, started the church in 1958. And then our current pastor, Pastor Bernard Armstrong, has been here for 13 years now. And so two pastors in the 65-year history of Tucson Baptist Church.
It's pretty amazing because, as we know, some churches have a lot of turnover. And as much as I hate to admit this, the church and I are the exact same age. I will not be turning 65 till August, but every time I go in there, and it's kind of like, for me, like God's taunting me, like reminding me that I'm going to be 65 because that's on the wall of our church. I know no one else sees that, but that's how I see when I go in. And I'm also grateful that our church has been around that long. Jonathan, Pastor Armstrong, we're going to take a short break in about a minute or so, but over Christmas, the church also did what I thought was an amazing outreach. Could you just explain what that is? And it goes to the point of us trying to reach the community.
Absolutely. So we love the Christmas season. In fact, that's really a lot of America celebrates it, but we wanted to put a little different spin on it. And so we have a program that's called Journey Through Christmas, and it's a walk-through, event. And a participant that come, they walk through about 10 to 12 different scenes that portray Jesus's life. And it starts with King Herod, and it goes to when Jesus was born in the manger, all the way to the cross, and then the grave, and how he rose again from the grave. And so what it is, it's an opportunity for us to kind of put on a live nativity scene. And our church really rallies behind it. And this past year, we had over 250 people from our church involved in various aspects, from acting it out to mm-hmm. behind the scenes to audio visual. And we're thankful that we've done this event four times now. And we've had well over 5,000 people from our community come out and see it. And so that's what Journey Through Christmas is. And it's been our community has really enjoyed coming through it and seeing a church put on a live nativity.
It's wonderful. Can you stay with me for a little bit? We're going to take a short break and come back. And I'd like you to talk about Easter and the extravaganza, if you don't mind.
Absolutely. I would love to.
Okay, great. You're listening to Win Tucson, and I'm Kathleen Wynn on this AM station, 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. And when we come back, we'll talk about Easter and how Tucson Baptist is engaging the community in a huge event for the entire community to celebrate Easter with Pastor Jonathan Armstrong. We'll be back right after these messages. Welcome back to Win Tucson. We're talking to Pastor Jonathan Armstrong with the Tucson Baptist Church on community outreach projects that they have to engage the community and to participate with your kids. And it's a really amazing family church. There's young families, there's older folks like me and my husband, but everyone is there, and it is a thriving, growing church, and I really love the dynamic of the church, if you will, Jonathan. You yourself, you're married, you have three children, and so are your kids aware that Easter is coming and that there's going to be an Easter egg hunt at the parks?
My daughters remind me very often that they're excited to go get some more candy from the Easter eggs. They are excited to go and have fun at the two different parks that we're going to have.
Yeah, so let the listeners know what Tucson Baptist is planning, and that it's free. It's for kids of ages 2 to 12, and I think, Reed Park and Silver Lake Park?
That is correct. So on April 1st, we're going to have our Easter extravaganza, and we've done this the last couple years, and we've always held it at Reed Park, but we want to kind of expand it year over year and do more parks throughout the city of Tucson. So on April 1st, you can come with your family to Silver Lake Park or to Reed Park, and we're going to have a full fun day of really a big Easter egg hunt, but then we're going to have some carnival games, some face painting, and just a good, safe place for you to bring your family to. And so that's on April 1st at 10 a.m. And then the following weekend for Easter on April 9th at 9:30, our church is going to have at 9:30 an Easter experience for families where they could come. And we're going to have a full continental breakfast for our community, some Easter crafts, complimentary family photos. And then at 10:30, we have our Easter service at 10:30. And our choir is going to do a great job putting on a special program for us, along with a Bible message by our pastor. And all this information you can find if you go to a website called Tucson.church. All this information is on there. And if you have any questions, you could feel free to reach out to us through that website.
So I'm going to take you back, and because you gave a lot of information, which was great. So on April 1st, did you say 10 or 10:30?
At 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock. At April 1st at 10 o'clock, Reed Park or Silver Lake Park. And do you want people to sign up ahead of time, or can they just show up?
So we would prefer people to sign up ahead of time so we just know how many eggs to put out. Last year, I think we did 15,000 eggs, and we have more eggs this year. So you can register on that Tucson.church website for either Silver Lake Park or Reed Park.
And I have to say, given the whole egg shortage thing, that's got to be an Easter miracle right there that you have more than 15,000 eggs, right?
That is right. That is right.
So Jesus rolls back the stone and Tucson Baptist has eggs. So that's already exciting. Also, this is for kids 2 to 12 and families can come. And what is the Tucson Baptist website? Can you give that to my listeners?
Yes. So the main Tucson Baptist website is just www.tucsonbaptist.com.
Very easy. Okay. And I just have to say, I think we have one of the best choirs that I've ever heard. And they're always coming up with new songs, and I know we've been practicing some of the songs that are going to be sung at the Easter service, but the choir that we have is simply, it's amazing. They just do incredible work. I don't even know how many people are in the choir. They take up the whole stage when they're up there, and I would say that if you want a traditional Easter service, that everything we're doing for Easter at the church is amazing, but the service would definitely inspire you and get you connected and to the reason for Easter season, and to celebrate the fact that Jesus is risen. What can you say about the, you mentioned the breakfast and the pictures and everything else. I think about how people get dressed up for Easter, right? Just like Christmas.
Right.
And
sure.
I know as a mom, if I could get all my children and grandchildren, they won't be there, but if I could get them all in one place, all dressed up, that picture would be worth $1 million. So
right.
I think it's the little things that you do that are thoughtful. We have two churches, one in English, one in Spanish. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So we are very fortunate to have a church that the mission is, like we've said in this interview, just to reach Tucson. And we realize that Tucson is growing. Their demographics are vast. And so at 10:30 every Sunday morning, we have an English service. And then we also have a Spanish service as well. And Pastor Abel Ramirez is our Spanish pastor. And yesterday, I think they had 174 people in church. So it's a growing church as well. And then also on Sundays at 3 p.m., we have a service for those who speak French and Swahili as well. And so our church has many services, and it's really to reach the people that are in our community that speak English, Spanish, French, Swahili. And then all of our services also are interpreted for those who are hard of hearing, and we have a deaf ministry as well.
I didn't know about the French and Swahili, so you threw me for a loop there.
Sorry about that.
And we also have a lot of military families that attend our church, so people that are serving, and we have a youth ministry. So if you want your children to start to attend Sunday school, does the church also have a school during the week?
Yes, ma'am. So we have both a preschool and an academy, and both of those have right around 100, or the preschool is Tucson Baptist Preschool, and that's for infants through five-year-olds. And then we have a Christian academy as well, a Tucson Baptist Academy, and that's kindergarten through 12th grade.
And so is there still openings? Can you, if you are a parent and you want your child to have a Christian upbringing, is there still openings in our for these schools?
Absolutely. We are unashamedly distinctively Christian in our education, and all of our teachers are members of our church or other local strong churches here in town. And again, all the education and the curriculum is distinctively Christian. We want to teach people to be in good standing with our Lord and Savior, and strong Christians. We want to teach them that they can be, that they should stand strong politically and have biblical morals when it comes to the political realm. And so we're teaching our kids distinctively Christian values and how we could be a great change in our society and be used by the Lord. And so you can, if you're interested in that, you could go to our academy's website, and that's just TucsonBaptistAcademy.com. And we are enrolling for the 2023-2024 school year. And what's exciting is that with the new ESA bill in Arizona, every student that comes to our school can get come to our school virtually for free with the ESA dollars. And if you have any questions about that, feel free to reach out to us, and we can help you walk through that process. And we'd love to have any questions that people have. They can reach out to us at TucsonBaptistAcademy.com, and we'd be happy to answer any of those questions that you may have.
On Friday, on our show, we were talking about the drag queen thing that's happening at Bookman's. And I mentioned as we came into this half hour that people at church stopped me, and I didn't realize that, you know, I knew people from the church listened, but there's such a concern for parents these days on what is actually being taught to our children. And I think you cannot overstate how important it is that we protect our children from ideas and misapplications of education, if you will. Where does Tucson Baptist stand in terms of what curriculum they're teaching?
Absolutely. That's a great question. And our philosophy is that we want to partner with parents. We don't want to usurp the parents' authority. We don't want to take the place of the parents in the role of upbringing their kids. We want to partner with the parents. And so our curriculum is open to any parent that wants to come and look at what our curriculum is. We are honest with that. But we do use a Christian curriculum that's called Abeka. And that's for really our entire school. And it's, again, like I had mentioned in the past, it's distinctively Christian, and it teaches biblical truths. But we, like I said, we want to partner with the parents. And so we don't want to usurp the authority. And if a parent does have a question about that, we certainly are open with that. And we will gladly and willingly share that curriculum so that parents know exactly what their kids are being taught. And then we don't want to keep anything from the parents. We are honest with the parents, and we want to verbalize where we're at with the students, with the parents. And we have a great parent-teacher partnerships here at our school because we realize we're on the same team leading their kids and teaching them in this society today.
And I know that you vet your teachers. We have some of the best teachers, I think, in the whole community. So, Pastor Armstrong, I want to say thank you. Number one, for standing for families, for standing for their children, for reaching out to the community, and for doing a great job and being a leader in the church. And we'll remind people about these events, but what a great way to reach out to our community. And thank you for accepting the invitation to come on the show this morning.
Thank you again, and I appreciate it. And I'm glad that you're a part of our church. We're thankful for your strong standing in our community, and we're very glad to have you and your husband as part of our church here at Tucson Baptist Church.
Thank you. We'll be back right after this. You've been listening to Win Tucson. I'm Kathleen Wynn on 10:30 a.m. The Voice, trusted local news. And welcome back to Win Tucson. We're going to shift gears a little bit, but same in the same How Do We Restore America? Roadmap to Restore America with author Mark Burrell. Mark wrote a book, Rediscovering the American Covenant, which basically is a blueprint using biblical principles to restore our country. Mark, thank you for accepting my invitation and coming on this morning. And I'm glad to have you back on the show.
Yeah, it's great to be with you, Kathleen.
As I shared with you over the weekend, in the church that I attend, we were in Revelations, and the lesson was the road to Armageddon. And one of the things the pastor said was, you know, 5 years ago, if he had said, this is what's going to be happening in the world 5 years from now, no one would have believed him. But yet here we are. And just in the news break before we came on, we have China meeting with Russia. Are we at the end of times? And can we come back from where we are right now in the world? It seems like it's a fairly scary place.
Yeah, it's a great question. A couple things. First, just about every generation thinks that they're living in the end times. it's just something to be wary of. Certainly in the last century, there have been a lot of things that have happened that have caused people to wonder if God's plan is drawing closer to a close. And of course, the Bible says we should be ready and we should understand the signs of the times. And so I like to think of it as keep one eye looking up, recognizing that it could happen at any time. But then I'm also very cautious to remind those I'm talking with that, you know, we don't know when that's going to happen. We have no idea.
Correct.
And this thing could go on for another 10 years, another 100 years, or another 1,000 years. And so it's so critical that we as Christians it's almost like give up, recognizing that things do look really dire right now. You know, I'm a history guy. We've talked, Kathleen, about that. And
yes.
I think about Dunkirk, you know, when 1940, when things look hopeless. And, of course, Winston Churchill roused the nation. And, you know, clearly God had a different plan. And here we are 70 years later, or 80 years later, that, you know, it just keeps going. So on one hand, we should be asking these questions. And part of me is always excited to think that we might be living in the end times. But on the other hand, we need to act like we're not. And we need to continue to live out God's principles for governing justly, which is, as you mentioned, the topic of my book, Rediscovering the American Covenant.
And your book is literally a blueprint, and there's so much information. And as I know, you are an engineer, and engineers are never short.
Guilty.
I'm married to one, so I can speak on with great authority on this.
You understand us.
I do. I don't know if that's a curse or a blessing. You know, typically churches don't talk about politics. I am blessed to go to a church that does, but that's not the usual. But is it time that we as Christians start to recognize political trends, culture changes, and start to speak up from a Christian perspective about what's happening in the world?
Yeah, I would even take it a step further. I make the case in the book that it's our citizenship duty. And I get that from Genesis. Genesis chapter 9, after the flood, the big question is, we just had a disaster. It was so bad that God wiped out mankind, preserved Noah and his family, and we're going to start over. But But the big question is, what would prevent that whole episode from happening again? And the answer is in Genesis 9:1-6, really. In those verses, God is very clear what he expects from the nations. He expects us to be fruitful, to increase in number, to fill the earth, and most importantly, germane to this conversation, is to govern justly. And we get that in Genesis 9:5-6, specifically, where he demands an accounting for the shedding of innocent blood. And this passage of Scripture, I don't know that I've ever heard a sermon on, you know, Sunday morning sermon from the pulpit on Genesis 9:5-6. Maybe you have, but yeah. I wager that most people listening to you right now have not. The only time I've learned about it is in Sunday school. Thankfully, I had a great mentor who taught me about it. And yet, this is where we're told that we have a duty. It's our responsibility. And in the book, I'd like to ask this question. The question is, well, who does God expect to do this if we're told to govern justly and we're given all this information through the nation of Israel in the Old Testament to help us understand what that means, which I include in the book? Then who does God expect to do this? And I propose there's maybe four groups. One group is the group that rejects God. And of course, you know, why would he expect that group to step forward and govern justly if they reject him?
Right.
Another group, group two, would be a group that doesn't know God. Well, that group might do better if they happen to be, you know, on the moral side. But is it those folks that don't know God that he expects to step forward? Group three would be new believers. Believers that, you know, understand their faith or they're learning about their faith. Does he expect them to step forward if they're just learning their Bible and learning about God? Probably not. And then there's group four, experienced believers who love their faith, who love God, and supposedly study the Bible. So I make the case that we're the ones. It's not that we should, like, get interested in political trends. I go further, Kathleen. I say, listen, this is a citizenship duty that God has given to people of faith across all ages. And to not be engaged is to not execute our one of our key responsibilities, which is we're seeing in the decline of America the key to keeping a stable and productive society, so you can even share the gospel.
Correct.
So yeah, I'm much more bullish on this as a responsibility.
Well, and to your point, and a concern is that group of strong Christians, people that are strong in their faith, that have practiced Christianity for maybe their lifetime or most of their lifetime, is that a growing group or is that a shrinking group? Because if you do, in the four illustrations you gave of the different groups, and the concern in listening to that I have is that the group that is doesn't believe in God, or and I would almost say there's a fifth group now, that people that are actively against God, devil worship and evil, and all the things that are really showing out in our universe right now, people standing against the church and against God openly and publicly, with no shame.
Yeah, there's no doubt that persecution is coming. And again, I submit that this is a direct result of the church disengaging in politics, or at a minimum, you might phrase it this way. Our civil leaders, if you went back 50, 100 years ago, our civil leaders used to at least talk about these principles, these biblical principles. There's wonderful quotes. In fact, I have some of them in my book from presidents who constantly reinforced the idea that we were a Christian nation and that faith was critical and that law and order was dependent on the Christian faith. But to your point, the church has really stepped back from that. We've got this, it's almost like an ecclesiastical or a church establishment who says that we should be only focused on evangelism. This is the number one reason they give to not be involved in politics. And I deal with that head on in the book. In chapter 4, I show how God actually, his evangelistic strategy in the Old Testament was actually to draw people to Israel because they were governing justly. And that's in Deuteronomy 4. It's very clearly called out that that was God's plan for evangelism. And yet, you know, this is one of the reasons why people used to want to come to America, because they wanted to be free. And so we had this wonderful opportunity to explain why America is the land of the free and the home of the brave. And of course, you explain our faith and you're evangelizing them. But we've walked away from that. And so I'm hopeful that the book will help answer some of these questions. It really is meant to be almost like a manual, a handbook for pastors who want to learn more themselves and have a strong biblical argument so that they can equip their church.
And you bring up a really good point about Israel. And that is what's happening over in that part of the world it's gone on for thousands and thousands of years. But Israel has been a strong ally of the United States, and there's just a change, if you will, in the world perspective. And so do we as Americans stand with Israel? Because I feel that they're under attack as much as we are.
Yeah, that has been the longstanding American policy. And of course, there's biblical reasons why that's true, why we should do that. And the first is that nations that tend to go against Israel do not fare well. It just doesn't end well for those nations. I mean, just in a casual observance of history would say that you probably ought to support Israel if you're in a position to do so. And secondly, Israel also has a government that follows a lot of these biblical principles. Chief among them is religious liberty. And I was just listening to someone on a podcast not too long ago. It was a person that was an Arab, had a Muslim faith, and they went to Israel, and they were surprised to see how easy it was and how free and open people were, even though they, you know, they were Arabs or had the Muslim faith. Israel is very open and tolerant of other faiths, even though obviously they are deeply committed to their own religion. So they're living out the biblical template, and in my estimation, better than we are right now.
Yes.
But that template is available to any nation. I make that argument in the book. Any nation that wants to follow that template, God will bless. That's the amazing thing about what we learn in the Old Testament.
We're talking to Mark Burrell, author, Rediscovering the American Covenant. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk about how do we as Americans fix what's broken right now in our country and honor God. You're listening to Kathleen Wynn on Wynn Tucson, 10:30 a.m. The Voice. Trusted local news and talk here for you on Monday. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson. We're talking to Mark Burrell, who has authored Rediscovering the American Covenant. Mark, there's so many questions. We could spend like a day on your book. In chapter 5, you talk about the writing of the Declaration of Independence, and there's a moral law that applies to all people and nations, the law of nature and of nature's God, to which all are obligated and which all are entitled to live by. Do we still remember that as an American people, that was the founding of this country?
We do not, which is unfortunately. And I think one of the most strategic things that progressives did to help get America off track was when they started to lobby to get the Ten Commandments removed from public view, supposedly because it violated separation of church and state. And that phrase, separation of church and state, is nowhere in any of our founding documents.
Correct.
The founders did not see any separation. What they were concerned about in the letter that Hugo Black referenced in 1947, where he wrote that opinion, was a private letter from Thomas Jefferson, who was then president, to the Danbury Baptist Association up in Connecticut. And he was writing to say the exact opposite. He was saying that the state cannot infringe on your Baptist faith. And they were concerned about that because a lot of Baptists were going down to Virginia and getting arrested because they weren't credentialed. They hadn't been ordained in the Anglican faith at that point. Virginia was an Anglican state, and you couldn't preach unless you were an Anglican. And so this was the early part of our nation when we were working this out. We were working out, we didn't want to have an established church at the federal level, and we didn't want that at the state level either. So it took a while for that to happen. But the point is that a separation of church and state was meant to reinforce the idea that the state cannot infringe on the church, and it was just assumed that that the Christian faith was the genesis of the American founding, specifically the Declaration. And in fact, I have this in the book, I'm pretty sure, there's a Congress actually studied this question in 1853, I think it was, and they came back with a study, a report, that said that it was clear that America was founded as a Christian nation. And of course, there's many other references, but they have been successful in creating this new separation of church and state narrative, and then used that in the last 50 years to get the Ten Commandments removed from all the schoolrooms, all the courtrooms, all the public displays. I'm sure there's still a few left, but by and large, they're being taken down. And when you do that, you're removing the most critical standard, the most critical concept of what it means to be just and to have a just society. And then it becomes a free-for-all. And your citizens, but now we have several generations of citizens who don't even know what the moral law is.
And don't understand it. It hasn't been encouraged. Yeah. It is not part of... And also in your book, you said the purpose of civil government is protecting unalienable God-given individual rights. And to your point, I don't think the most recent generations know that.
No, they don't. They're not being taught it. They're being taught the opposite, you know, that America was founded now in 1619 when the first indentured servants arrived. By the way, they were indentured servants, and many of them worked for their freedom. That was a very common practice. But they hitched that to slavery, which happened really several decades later, and they claim that's the original founding, which shows us a couple of things, Kathleen. Number one, that they're just determined to anchor America's founding in slavery. And number two, it shows us that they really don't understand the concept of a covenant relationship. And I detail this in the book. This was a contract. This was a taking a vow, if you will. Our founders did when they signed their name to that declaration. And the process they followed where they acknowledged God, they appealed to God for the rectitude of their intentions, they committed to it, their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor, and they signed the document knowing that if they were caught, they would be hanged. And then they declared it. They sent copies to England. I mean, these guys, they really did not hold back. And I'm convinced, Kathleen, that that's the reason God blessed their effort, because there was no reason why they should have been successful going up against the global superpower at the time.
Correct. Well, and the moral courage it took to do that at that day and age and in that time with no, it was almost impossible, right? And so to underscore what you're saying, but they stood for God and they stood on godly principles, and it is the founding of this nation. And there is a concerted effort to mock God, to throw God out of our children's lives, to use our children as... possessions. I look at the open borders, I look at the trafficking, I look at the substance abuse and how we are not taking care of God's children. And it's terrifying as someone who is a grandparent, as someone who is a parent, to say, you know, is it time for another revival? I was a young child when the last one happened. Is it time, and are we going to have that in this country to turn this around?
Yeah, word about revival. Of course, the Asbury revival was getting a lot of press a few weeks ago, or maybe a month ago now. That's very optimistic to see that. And of course, the history of revivals is one where God tends to send revival, and then about 30 to 50 years later, something big happens. So go back to the first Great Awakening. That was in the 1730s and 40s. And what happened 40 years later? The founding of the nation, and then 15 years after that, the Constitution. And then you go to the second Great Awakening, which occurred in the 1820s. You know, what happened 40 years later? The Civil War, which was, you know, arguably the most difficult time for a nation. And to your point, I remember growing up to the Jesus Revolution that took place in the early 70s. Great movie, by the way. If you've not seen it, I did go and see it. And here we are, what, 50 years later?
Was that Kelsey? And, is Kelsey Grammer in that movie?
He is.
Okay.
He is. He is in it. It's very well done. And I encourage your viewers to go see it. So I think that I think all signs point to we're on the cusp of something. And the whole point of my book is to remind people that our nation was founded on a covenant and that things are pretty far gone right now. And in man's attempt, I don't think we're going to turn it around. I think we've got to get God to engage. And the way we do that is to recommit to our national founding covenant, which is the clear pattern that we see in the Old Testament from leaders like Josiah and Nehemiah, when they got the people together and read the covenant aloud and recommitted. And what did God do? He blessed their reign. So I think that's what it's going to take, and that's why I wrote the book.
And then the power of prayer, I mean, it sounds like just kind of cliche, but there really is a power to asking God for support, direction, that His will be done, and in His timing. And I think that's the thing where you really have to trust God, because it's all in His timing. But I agree with you in terms of great awakenings and transitions. And I certainly believe that we have one in front of us. So, Mark, we have about a minute and a half left. Would you please let people know, you've mentioned your book. How do people get a hold of your book? How can they buy a copy? It's a great, I would say it's a great educational tool. You've done a great job of applying the Bible to how to restore America. And it really does give us a roadmap to restore America, like is on the cover of your book.
So you can get it at my website, defendamericanliberty.com, all one word, hopefully memorable. So again, that's defendamericanliberty.com. You can learn more about me. You can contact me. If folks would like to have me come speak at their church, that's what I'm doing now. I'd love to come talk with you. And you can also get it wherever books are sold. So, yeah, it's on Amazon. And if you get it there and you like it, I'd ask you to leave a review so we can get the algorithm working in our favor. But, yeah, that's how you can find out about me.
I just think it's important that we, as men and women, do not forget that there is a God, that God is there, and that God helped in the founding of this nation. I appreciate you. Please continue to go out and spread this word and this message, and that we can rediscover the American covenant. Author Mark Burrell.
Thanks, Kathleen.
Thank you. This has been Wynn Tucson. I'm Kathleen Wynn. We'll be back this week. We've got a lot of exciting things. Matt's turned the heat back on, so it's a good time to be living in Tucson, Arizona. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day.